Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Just coming up to halftime at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, the TV cameras picked out a couple of New Zealand players, both of them down on one knee, desperately trying to get some air into the lungs after 40 minutes spent chasing forlornly after their Irish opponents. Suddenly aware they were on the big screen, they hopped to their feet, trying to bluff their way through, but everybody saw it. Everybody knew that this moment told us the truth of the first half, far more than the scoreline, which at that stage had the away team somehow 5 points ahead. By the time the full-time whistle went, New Zealand had made 238 tackles, but still not enough to withstand the Irish onslaught, led, as predicted on this very show, by the Irish back row.
Man of the Match report is solely distributed between the numbers 6, 7 and 8, no matter what goes on in the game.
Keelan Dorris, the amount of work he went through, the amount of carries, brilliant footwork, scored that try, but he is my player of the match.
Kieran Murphy from second captain is going to be absolutely delighted. He loves the back row man of the match, and I'm sure he was shouting for Keelan Dorris, Murphy, you're listening there.
Now it's Porter. He'll pick it up and he'll try and drive through the tackle of Brady Retallick. They go to Sexton now. Arkey flings it wide. Keenan! James Lowe! James Lowe scores and Ireland take the lead.
They want more this afternoon and they got more.
All Blacks lining up on their own goal line. He's over! The hooker scores! Ronan Keller had the try. Simply sensational. Punching it up the middle. Here's the big run from Dorris. Keelan Dorris puts Ireland in front. Stunning try by Ireland.
Oh, what a moment.
Joey Carberry, born in Dargaville, the Irish parents.
He struck it pretty well, but it's over. Great kick from Joey Carberry, and Ireland lead again by six. And there's just 2 minutes on the clock. Well, the All Blacks have it. Can they pull off another miraculous win? They've done it before in this very same stadium, but not today. It's not going to happen today. It's Ireland's. They get a penalty right in front.
Oh, it's Ireland's day.
A huge moment in the life of Joey Carberry. He can put it out of reach. Come the day, come the hour, and the glory will be with Ireland. They've been the better team right throughout. They'll put it into touch, and fitting that James Lowe, who had the first say, has the last say. Famous victory again, brilliant Ireland.
Back it goes to James Lowe, how fitting, but the man born in New Zealand kicks it out to seal an Irish victory.
The crowd have gone bananas here.
The crowd have gone bananas, says Donal Lennon. Love it, absolutely love it. Sky Sports New Zealand commentary there from Grant Nisbet and our guest on the World Service last week, Justin Marshall, to close out your audio bed from an incredible occasion on Saturday. You're welcome to the show. Hi, Si.
Hey, Owen, how are you doing?
Hi, Ken.
Hey, Owen, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Ken. And hello to the surprise star of the last few minutes of RT's television coverage, Kieran Murphy.
I think we could all say that came as a big surprise to us all. That was quite a weird moment in my front room, I can tell you. Like, literally, there's 3 minutes to go. Ireland lead by less than the points total of a converted New Zealand try. It's quite a tense moment, as Michael McCarthy of Bulls.ie was saying on Twitter. Quite a tense moment in Irish sporting history. We know how this has often ended in the past. So for me to get a mention at that moment, and for my phone to completely go into meltdown as I'm trying to focus on the last couple of minutes of what turned out to be a brilliant Irish victory. That was, yes, that did come as a bit of a shock.
No, good man, Hugh. Always flying the second captain's flag there on the national broadcaster. It had to happen, really. I did tweet you in advance saying which of the back rowers is going to get man of the match.
I actually didn't see that tweet until after the...
Oh, right, okay.
I just stayed off Twitter for the duration of the game. So are you piggybacking on this? This seems like a weird thing for Owen to say, but then I realised it was like about half an hour to go in the game.
I was thinking it might even be Peter O'Mahony off the bench. It was more likely to be Peter O'Mahony off the bench than any player from any other position.
Colour me not surprised when Caelan Darris did get the nod, to be fair.
If they had ventured outside the back row, you couldn't have argued if James Lowe had gotten a great all-round game by him, scored a try, but that's not what he wanted to talk about.
You bollocks is always talking about my D, and I got up and I whacked Rico. And we got the turnover from it, man. Like, I don't care about that first try. I don't care about anything. It was the moment. It was 70 minutes, you know, to be able to read, do everything that I've been doing for the last 6-7 months and produce in 70 minutes against the best team in the world. That's what I'm happy about.
You bollocks is always talk about my D. That's Lowe talking on Channel 4 there. And in fairness, sorry, the bollocks is... had to take that on the chin, because that was a huge moment, that tackle on Rico Ione, with Ireland 3 points up. And that was when O'Mahony comes in then for the turnover.
Do bollocks have chins on? you should probably get that checked out, Owen. I mean,
Carberry then kicked the penalty to lead by six, wasn't it, at that stage. That was an absolute huge, I wouldn't say match-turning moment, as we were three up, but it just gave us that tiny bit of breathing room. It got us to that lead, which is even more nerve-wracking. And then
it's funny, because like, as an all-round performance, physically, tactically, mentally, emotionally, whatever you want to say, I can't remember a better one. Like, we were skillful, right? Our handling amazing, set piece basics incredible, tactically so progressive, passionate, you know, used the emotion, all the old stuff from the 80s and 90s that we used to have, great defense, mentally resilient, dominate possession. The stats are ridiculous, like off the charts for an Ireland-New Zealand game. Everyone played well. Everyone on the bench played well. And yet, like, as you say, with 7-8 minutes to go, we were ahead by just 3 points. So we actually needed Lowe's tackle and then the O'Mahony turnover. We needed even Carberry's kick from halfway. And even then, after that, we needed more pressure defense and the last penalty. And even then, was there a minute and a half left to go? And Hugh, Cal and Donal were like, yeah, we've won it. And the crowd all went bananas. But it was a minute and a half. And I think you have a minute to kick the penalty. And I was like, there's a chance this hits the feckin' post and lands in, I don't know.
Oh, even I had, I can be a little bit defeatist at these moments. But even I had was jumping around at that stage. So I had it in the bag.
Did you? I mean, the reason it was still so tight is that we, I think, got tunnel vision close to the New Zealand line over and over. Like, for all those things to go right for us and it still be within 3 points, is because in their 22, we went to their 22 16 times and we failed to score on 12 of those visits. But what I really liked afterwards was that Jack Conan, Sexton, Farrell, and maybe more, they all referred to that afterwards, which kind of gives me hope that we've learned from 2018, because I think the takeaway is this is a one-off brilliant performance and it comes on the back of the England and Japan games. Great. But it's November. But it's Ireland. World Cup 2 years away. All that sort of stuff. But I guess the bigger point I want to make is that this isn't the final game plan, I think, in the players' heads and the management's head. It isn't the final 15 to start of the squad that will definitely go into World Cup. It's just a really good performance. Things will change. Form will come and go. Injuries will happen. But let's keep adding more strings to our bow. Let's learn to get results when we're not playing this well, because we won't always play this well. We won't always have the 15 starters be so, so good. We won't always have 50,000 fans going absolutely nuts. So I think there's a reality now. I hope and I think we've learned from 2018 and from that period of time and as well under Eddie O'Sullivan, you know, just deciding, okay, this is our starting 15. This is how we play and go into World Cup like that.
A bit of news that came in just after we spoke to our guests today. So it's not mentioned in the chat, but Sexton's out injured for a bit, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah,
that's, so that's 4-2-6 rather than 46 weeks.
Yeah, twists his knee and ankle. And Jack Carty comes into the squad for the Argentina game. And Gavin Coombs returns too. He had an illness of some sort. They didn't say what it was. So it looks like Carberry to start, and I presume Harry Byrne on the bench, which makes it interesting because something we'll get into in the chat is part of the way we attacked. It was so reliant on timing, these new tactics that we have, outstripping a rush defence, but also how pivotal is Johnny Sexton's, that sort of helicopter view he has of a rugby game, even though he's down at pitch level, but he somehow seems to see the bigger picture and makes it all pivot around him. But was that performance against New Zealand and against Japan less reliant on Sexton than all our previous sort of 10 years of rugby? And if so, I guess we're going to learn next week. It makes next week even more interesting, doesn't it?
Well, Sexton, it does. Sexton was busy taking late hits from the New Zealand players and trying and failing to bring the refs' attention to most of them. It was funny. Yeah. Luke Pearce.
It was a combination of, like, he does keep getting hit late, but he is also complaining too much.
Yeah. So, well, Luke Pearce might have felt that. He might have felt that. He wasn't having much truck with him, and neither was the New Zealand hooker, Dane Coles, as picked up on the ref mic. Listen closely, everybody. Well, actually, if there are young ears, as they say, don't let them listen at all. But the rest of you, listen closely. Okay.
We don't play referrals. We're doing our job.
He's a nervy guy.
Hey, wait, careful.
There's an awful lot of talk. Careful, says the referee, just in case you didn't get that the first time.
He's a nervy guy.
Okay, if you haven't got it the second time, we should probably just move on.
That's quite enough bad language for one day on show.
Oh, you're referring to the on-air spat between two of the presenters on our Luxembourg Ireland.
I'd rather just leave it at that, Owen, quite frankly. You insist on bringing introducing rancor into every podcast now. No, I'm not having it, Owen. I'm not having it. This was too good a weekend for Irish sport for you to ruin it now on Monday morning for me.
You will hear lots more Ken Early in that football podcast because you're not hearing much from here, Ken. I think you're probably just in shock at the amazing occasion at Land's End Road on Saturday. Yeah.
I had it on in the background. I saw
what was happening in the foreground.
I was just looking at my phone.
Ah, okay.
All right, fair enough. Maybe the one of the great sporting events of the year wasn't quite enough to push the phone into the background, Ken. But I suppose we all are on.
Interesting stuff, huh? Just a lot of interesting articles to get through. You know, there's always more articles than you can read.
This is true. You can sign up on the World Service. To be totally truthful, you don't have to sign up to the World Service to hear our football podcast today, our Luxembourg Republic of Ireland reaction show, but we will have another full football pod tomorrow exclusively for World Service members, and loads of other good stuff coming up over the next few days. So sign up on secondcaptains.com for £5 a month plus a little bit of VAT depending whereabouts in the world you're living. But right now, let us enjoy the victory over New Zealand.
80 minutes is up because there's an incredible gone off here.
Yeah, my apartment's going to be stacked full of lads.
Probably 10 lads coming over.
For the whole thing, so it's going to be absolute carnage. It's going to be absolute carnage.
We're stacked full of lads. We're going to be 10 lads coming absolute over. Carnage.
Simon, I don't know what you're doing toweling off there. Keep that top off and hit that bong one more time.
Well, this chat should be a lot of fun for most of us on the call anyway. Andrew Trimble, how are you?
I'm great. Really good.
Good. Jerry Thorney, how are things?
Excellent, thank you. Excellent.
And the one person who might not have such a good time is Scotty Stevenson from Spark Sport in New Zealand. Scotty, thank you so much. It's also a ridiculous time over there at night, so thank you so much for doing this chat.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. I've got my Galway flat peak on. I'm feeling good about life, boys. And, you know, I enjoyed a cracking test match on the weekend. So we'll get through my pain through this conversation, I am sure. But we'll also get to the bottom of what's going on.
Well, what is the vibe? What's the reaction in New Zealand? Was it the better team on the day one?
Yeah, Ian Foster made the point that the All Blacks were second best, but I think he wasn't giving enough credit to Daylight. I think Daylight was second best and the All Blacks were probably third in that test match. And look, it's a real pity that none of us could be there to watch that live, because being there live at Aviva is such a wonderful experience. And I'm reminiscing about 2 years ago being there in 2018?
2018.
3 years ago. Yeah. And thinking about the experience there where Ireland just absolutely monstered the All Blacks at Aviva Stadium. And it was such a wonderful occasion for the game, for the team, for the country, and for Dublin itself. I can't remember getting back to my hotel room. So that's obviously a good sign that it was a good night. But they were magnificent again, absolutely magnificent. And weirdly about, I think, New Zealand rugby fans when it comes to Ireland at the moment, we just love to give the Irish credit. I don't know whether that's condescending or not. I suspect it's not. I think there's just a growing respect in what Ireland are able to offer the test match environment when it comes to games against New Zealand right now. And you can't argue with how they've performed since that breakthrough victory in 2016, which I was also fortunate enough to be at too.
Andrew, where do you rank this one compared to the other victories over New Zealand? And that is a very sweet sentence to be able to say.
Yeah, the luxury we didn't have for a long time, and now we have a portfolio of victories against the All Blacks, which is a great place to be. But I'm glad Scotty's here, because this episode had the potential of being very boring, and I was just talking about he had a blinder. These guys are all incredible. Like, the performance from minute one to 80 was just unbelievable. The standard of skill execution just was ridiculous, and just the tries from the All Blacks were against the grain. They were against the complete flow of the game, one or two little hiccups, and I think that just showed, maybe that just kept Ireland sharp and just made them realize, okay, they probably will score again. We have to keep at them, we have to outscore them, we have to keep on top of things. But there was something about it. I think 2018 was a step up from 2016. I think this was probably a step up again, in that just the execution, and I think there was something about the mindset was slightly different, in that it was relentless. It was continuing to go after them. There wasn't an element of managing the game or trying to see out the game. There was none of that. And I think there was elements of that, quite a bit of that probably in 2016. And then we snapped out of it. Small bits of it in 2018, but there was hardly an element of that at all at the weekend, I thought.
Jerry, where do you, even if you want to broaden it out, I mean, where do you rank that in terms of Irish performances of the recent past?
It's hard to think of a better one. I certainly agree with Andrew, as the pick of the three wins over the All Blacks. You might say the St. Patrick's Day coronation in Twickenham, when Ireland were just so on top of England that day, and there was a grand slam at stake. You know, you can't, everything has to be the best, doesn't it, nowadays, or the worst. There's no in-betweens anymore. So let's say it's definitely up. There's been none better, and it's up there with the very, very, very best I've ever seen. Dave Walsh, journalist of the Sunday Times, whom, you know, is a good friend, and I've known him a long time. He's an excellent sports writer. He came up to me at the end of the game and said, "Jerry, that was the best Irish performance I've ever seen." So for Dave to say that is good enough by me.
Yeah, because I think we've been, you know, brilliant defensive team in the past, or really tough or aggressive or emotional, and say had our basics really good under times with Joe Schmidt. But I don't think we've ever married the sort of passion with the handling, with the tactics, with the set piece, with the basics. And then I thought the fortitude to respond to New Zealand scores, because there was a load of milestones along the way, Scotty, where I felt like this was just going to be another one of those tragic losses to New Zealand, where we play really well, outplay them for, you know, 80-90% of the game, but they still win. You know, the fact that you were within 3 points with 8 minutes to go, even the late Peter Manny missed tackle where it looked like you were through, and then James Lowe brought the tackle. Rob Herring delaying the throw in. Those all felt like little things where, yeah, they were the things we were going to look back on, and that's why we lost by 1 point in the last second to New Zealand.
Yeah, well, they certainly did. And I mean, it's great to have Jerry on the call too, because the last time we saw each other was 2019. Jerry, you know, that quarterfinal victory for the All Blacks against Ireland, which was one-way traffic, really. Mm. The All Blacks able to impose themselves on the Irish team. And I think it was an Irish team that was probably on the decline after a very long period of sustained success. This is it seemed to me a born again Irish performance. And that is what's so encouraging for Irish rugby fans. Even though there are some of the same personnel involved, Conor Murray starting on the bench, unheard of 2 years ago. Are you kidding me? Jamison Gibson-Park getting the start. But then the All Blacks not even going to the bench for a reserve halfback. That just showed how much pressure they were under in this fixture. We knew the reputation of the Irish, which was good for 60. Now we've got an Irish side that is consistently good for 80. And there is so much respect this side of the hemisphere of the equator for what Ireland are able to achieve. The ambition was outstanding. And ambition is a word we don't use enough in rugby. The All Blacks are caught in a transition offense, and it's a transition offense designed by Wayne Smith. Wayne Smith no longer coaches the All Blacks, and yet the All Blacks are still wedded to transition play, i.e. putting pressure on teams, forcing turnovers and then attacking off those turnovers. The turnover count in that game was 11 apiece, and yet the All Blacks could still not impose themselves on the game. That says everything about the way Ireland were playing, but it also adds, I think, some depth to the statistic that we've all talked about for the last couple of days, the 238-odd tackles the All Blacks made. How many of those, Andrew Trimble, were dominant tackles? If you're not making dominant tackles, they're not effective tackles. Ireland made the gain line almost, as far as my viewing was concerned, it seemed on every carry. If you're allowing teams to make the advantage line on every carry, you're on the back foot for the entire game. And that is a very uncharacteristic defensive pattern for an All Black side, in my point of view.
Yeah, like that gain line, as you say, Ireland were completely dominant when they had a ball in hand, but it wasn't, like, when people think about getting the gain line, they think, oh, give your big ball carriers the ball and make them front up and win collisions. It was not that at all. Yes, there were elements of that, but the big thing was the accuracy, the passing accuracy, the tempo, the shape, the structure, everything just looked so crisp. It just looked like it had been really well thought through and it had been coming to fruition for a long time. And then finally those passes just start sticking. They got more confident. They were able to I think there was a lovely demonstration of just having the support runner just off the shoulder, shorten up the passes so that line speed from the All Blacks just couldn't be effective. Shorten up the passes and then just having players off the shoulder, like a little shadow line, was really nice from a few of the wingers. But just the tempo as well, the breakdown accuracy was so good, and they just didn't give New Zealand an opportunity to get set and actually come across a lot off the line and change the tide. It just felt like it was one way, and they just did not stop keeping that tempo up over and over again, and then the gain line gets easier and easier. That's what it felt like.
Jerry, what was the most impressive part of the display for you?
Two things stand out, Simon. One was just Ireland's attacking game. Everything about it, how cohesive it was, the animation off the ball, using three-man and two-man pods as screens and going out the back or just trucking up, which checked the blitz defence of the All Blacks as it had. We thought when Ireland did that against Japan, okay, well, that's just against Japan. But to actually repeat the trick against New Zealand just showed you how much this attack has evolved under Mike Catt and Andy Farrell. I thought that was really, in a technical level, then you look at the skill levels involved in that, like, No tight head prop in the world has ever been able to pass the ball like Tadhg Furlong. Like, no look passes out the back. Bundiaki, whose distribution game has for some reason always been questioned, beautiful no look passes, and then that superb right to left pass for Hugo Keane, and Hugo Keane to do the same for James Lowe. I thought it was just the attacking intent and ambition and execution were off the scale, best I've ever seen. But also, and Andrew touched on this as well, and you touched on as well, the mental strength of the performance, to keep coming back from so many disappointing blows. We lost count of any charges at the line they had. 15 phase attack, all within inside the 5-metre zone. You have to give credit to the All Blacks for the way they defended their line. It's like their lives depended on it. But then go in 10-5 down at half time, come back out and dominate the first 10 or 15 minutes of second half and score. I think turned it from 5-10 deficit to 20-10 up. And the All Blacks made about three or four unusual handling errors in that. They look spooked. They look rattled by the occasion. I'd said in the preview that I don't know if the All Blacks enjoy playing Ireland as much as they used to. They clearly don't. And particularly in a full Aviva in November, they know they're in for a really tough game now. This is a complete break with history and tradition. And I think it's a team that's been evolving in very much in the way Andy Farrell wants to evolve. And this was a signature win with Mike Catt and the brilliance of bringing Paul O'Connell so that you could take a couple of All Blacks throws. So it's all very well. But one of Andy Farrell's favourite phrases is next moment focused. And whatever work they've done with Gary Keegan, the sports psychologist, they just keep coming back next moment focused. Where they've just conceded a second try to the All Blacks, where they've just been denied on the line again, where they withstood all manner of, they should have been out of sight long before the end. And it's, you're thinking, oh no, I watched it again yesterday, and you're right, Simon. With a few minutes to go, I'm getting flashing images of 2013 again.
3 points in,
it's like, yeah, like you haven't beaten the All Blacks until turned off all the lights and locked up the stadium, then yeah, I think we've won that now. They're just, if it's overtime, we know from 2013, no team can conjure a try from the other end of the pitch better than these All Blacks under the pump, because their skill levels. And they, Ireland just closed them out. They just stayed next moment focused. And I thought that was probably, along with the attack, the most impressive aspect of the performance.
Just on Jerry, what Jerry said there, like, we all thought the clock, I don't think the clock was quite red. There's maybe 2 minutes left. There was a right-hand scrum for the All Blacks in around halfway. And I think everybody was reacting the way you're describing, Jerry. Everybody went, right, here we go. They're going to pull something out of their sleeve. This is going to be incredible. And they looked aimless. It looked really pedestrian. A couple of passes, bit of a brick wall. And actually, I was thinking, I was giving them too much credit. I was thinking, right, they've got like a third or fourth phase strike here. Careful. There's some, and it never came. And it was so weird to see the All Blacks look quite aimless.
Trimby Sexton said something afterwards that it may look to you guys like this is a recent sudden thing, but to us, been working away in the background, and that equates with what he has been saying for quite a while. And what we saw on the pitch didn't always match what Sexton was saying in press conferences, but now in the last three games, it really, really does make sense to us all. But I was thinking about the reasons why maybe it's so obvious on the pitch. It seems to me a dramatic turnaround in terms of performance, but it's almost like you need the confidence to play this style of game. So the two things had to happen at once. The tactics and the confidence had to come together. But also then you've got Kelleher, who's finally getting picked all the time. Darris is back fit. Conan's fit and getting selected. Porter's been changed over to Loosehead. Gibson Park is getting selected. Lowe has come past his defensive issues, we hope. And then Farrell has had time to get used to being head coach. I don't think we should overlook the fact that this is his first go as head coach anywhere, and it's taken him a little while to get used to it. And then you throw in all the other factors like Paul O'Connell fixing our line-out and our ruck. Mike Catt is clearly having more influence than he was ever allowed to have at England. Apparently a very nice guy that didn't always have the strength of personality maybe to get his game plan onto the field.
This was so the Mona Lisa of Mike Catt's coaching career, according to the Telegraph site.
That's right, yeah. So there's quite a few factors in this suddenly going from like what looked a desperate situation at times in the last two Six Nations to suddenly like, hang on, this is three of the best performances we've ever put in a row.
Yeah, first of all, with what Johnny said after the game, he said this has been a long time coming, that we have been working on this and it just hasn't quite clicked. I'm not buying that, to be honest. I don't think, it's not
teams
like we've
seen. Teams
say
that all the time, don't they?
Exactly, but it's always, it's a slightly smug position after, in the press conference after the game, whenever things have gone brilliantly and you can say whatever you want. And there's an element of, I don't think he's saying that this has been the way we've been playing, but it just hasn't clicked, or the passes haven't stuck, or the skill execution hasn't been good enough. We have seen a completely different style of rugby. If we're honest, it's not like this is just, it's just started working. We've been doing this and it wasn't working. Now we're doing it and it's working. We have been doing something totally different. So I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's probably, I think the point you made there about some of the new blood coming into the team, Conan playing incredibly well. Ronan Kelleher was ridiculously good. I've never seen Hooker play that well. He was, and a part of me always kind of thought, is this the Leinster bandwagon? Are we hearing this? Everybody's talking about how good this guy is, and I've never seen someone fulfill all the talk as well as he did. He was unbelievable. So mobile, so physical. Set piece really good as well. There's a few things on that, and I think the Farrell influence, yes, potentially, and I think there's a potential lazy conclusion that we could come to where we've got the combination of the Schmidt detail and the Farrell freedom, and I don't think that's the case. That performance of the weekend was a performance that looked detailed. That was not just a free, let's throw the ball around. No. It's detailed. There's thought went into it. There's a lot of homework goes into that. It looks fun. It looks fun. They're expressing themselves. But the only way...
Darris said that again afterwards. We love playing this style of play.
But it's the only reason they can express themselves if they do their homework and they get their detail in place and they get that structure. They outsmarted that defense. You only outsmart an All Blacks defense if you've done your homework and you're detailed. And that, it's not freedom. That's actually a real structured approach. And then it looks free as a result. One other thing you mentioned there on James Lowe. Again, it was probably a little bit unnecessary of him to have a pop at the Springboks after the game about the style of rugby. Again, maybe just after the game.
Just look up our pool in the next World Cup. Yeah,
exactly.
Really, It's an African team that completely rely on grudges and hatred. And
so I just, for people didn't see that, he said, we didn't play negative footy like the stereotype South Africa. They're not playing the game the way it should be played when they win. We've got our own identity and it's great. So that's what you're referring to there, Andrew. Yeah.
And the interviewer sort of went, well, I didn't mention South Africa. Did someone mention South Africa? But he's talking about his, Simon, you mentioned his defensive issues over the last year. I actually think way too much has been made of his defensive issues. I have an issue with wingers getting the blame for everything because having been one of those wingers and gotten the blame a number of times, no one appreciates midfield not winning collisions, not getting off the line, not getting their spacing right, not competing at the breakdown. If the ball is fast and a team gets exposed, it's the winger gets exposed and they're the ones that are asked to make hard decisions. And James Lowe got one or two of those wrong, but he got hung out to dry a little bit. Now, I don't think, he definitely wasn't perfect. He made a couple of mistakes, but he got hammered way too much, I think. Having said that, he hasn't, let's put that to one side. I don't agree with that, but let's humor the bollockses. And if we're going to humor them, then... So let's say he did have issues. He hasn't fixed them because Ireland haven't defended. They didn't defend hardly a minute against Japan and hardly 5 minutes against the All Blacks. And he made one hit in the last minute of the game. Whenever the All Blacks are chasing the game, they throw a long loopy pass and he smashes.
That was a great decision, Trimby.
It was, like... but that does not mean he's not gone from broken to fixed. I don't think he was that broken, but I don't think that completely changes how we perceive him either.
This was not the pitch to me to join the Zoom call that we were going to have some restorative justice for Trimby here. I mean, he's using this as a platform to right all of his wrongs in his career. That's fine. I mean, I get that, and it's a good platform to do it on. But, yeah, look, James Lowe's left boot alone gets Ireland out of a lot of trouble in that game. So, you know, forgetting the tackles for one moment, he's got a great left boot. He always did when he was here in New Zealand as well. In fact, that's why he was always picked for the Chiefs under Dave Rennie, because he could clear the line. That's what he did. I tell you, Keenan was sensational in that game. And one of the great things about the All Black defeats in the recent years, in the last couple of years, it's always the unexpected that gets them, the unexpected to them. And that's what confounds me. How is it unexpected? The All Blacks rely on kicking. The opposition will kick back. They'll counterattack from that return kick. Ireland ran more than they kicked in this game. And Keenan was key to that. And having Lowe there and Conway there as wing support on those runs back to the line, and, you know, not to mention Ringrose and Arkey and others, but that was, I think, one of the great secrets to that Irish result. Yeah, kick us the ball. You think we're going to kick it back. Then you're going to spring your attack. Nah, we're going to run it at you. We're going to run it back at you. We're going to counterattack from your kicks. And I love that. It's such a great strategy against this All Black team.
Jerry, there were bonuses left, right and centre. You know, there were sort of the headline acts. And then there's the likes of Joey Carberry coming off the bench and nailing that kick. I have to be honest, I was thinking, oh, I don't know, you know, you could go to you'd be doing well to get to the corner, but you could go for a touch, eat up a bit of time, hopefully win possession and see how it goes from there. But no, they went for from halfway.
I had it in my head during that kick. The pressure, forget about the crowd and the situation and playing New Zealand and Ireland and all that, just the pressure inside Joey Carberry's head on himself, his own little personal battle, I imagine.
And I thought, you're always reading stuff into it. I thought, he looks a bit nervous, you know, he looks a little bit nervy. But this is the kind of thing we need from Carberry. He didn't have that long on the pitch, and maybe he wouldn't have got on if it wasn't for Sexton getting injured. But it, just that exact thing we're talking about, the bit of cover for Sexton, the bit of confidence for a player we all have a lot of hope still in.
I never had any doubts about it, and I'll tell you why. Because in the last year, since Joey Carberry's come back, the one thing he's consistently done is nail his goal kicks. True. Even when he got charged down by Jack Carty and 10 minutes later had to nail a kick to win the match against Connacht, he nailed it very confidently. I was just watching. I just ran through the ball, went over, picked up the tee. You didn't even have to look at the posts or the linesmen to see that the flags were going to go up. And it was the same the way he struck that first one. The second one from halfway was sensational. And the third one, you just knew he was going to get as well. It was just a lovely feeling to finally, Ireland to be two scores clear. You thought the moment would never come. So I think he should take great confidence from that. Johan van Graan was positioned just beside us in the press box with two sons, one wearing an Irish jersey, one wearing a Springboks jersey, and he was just smiling there very contentedly at the end, because I got a little bit of a grief at the bottom of my piece because I mentioned the fact the Munster men delivered in the end game. Because Leinster players have obviously been the bulk suppliers and they've been getting a lot of the credit for this resurgence in Irish rugby. But you have to say that the old dogs of the long road, like O'Mahony, Nesso Tyke-Byrne, Keith Earls had his moments, and Joey Kirby, and they really contributed, and Conor Murray contributed that end game, closing it out. Because it's great to see somebody like Peter O'Mahony come on with that experience. And yeah, Joey, it's lots of echoes of Chicago. And that, amazing, that was Joey Kirby's debut 5 years ago, when he also came on for the last 20 minutes and helped steer the ship home. So he should take an awful lot of encouragement from that. There are a myriad of other bonuses, you're right, like Ronan Keller, Trimby's right. He was like a force of nature for an hour. This was the day he really announced himself as a proper test match animal. The moving of Porter back to Loosehead has almost transformed this pack, along with the emergence of Keller and Jack Conan becoming a line, and Caelan Dorris, who's just a fabulous footballer as well. Right now, you wouldn't swap that front row of Porter, Keller and Furlong for probably any other front row in the world. That's an extraordinary thing for Ireland to be saying. And they look at the age profile of that pack and they're all in their 20s, their average age 26. And they're all dynamic, they're real athletes, and they're very comfortable in the ball. So you get this interlinking between backs and forwards now, passing the skill sets. It doesn't really matter the number in the shirt. So there are loads of bonuses. And I think as well, you've got to give Farrell huge credit. He's been accused of being a conservative selector. And yet I think in 16 matches, he's used 59 players and given debuts to 23 players. Porter's effectively a new player in the team. Keller is a new player in the team under his watch. Doris is a new player under his watch. Jemison Gibson-Park has effectively become the number 9, and he is absolutely vital to the tempo which they play. His decision-making off the base, he nearly always gets right. It's bang, bang, bang every time. He's a very lively support player as well. And then you've got Hugo Keenan, who's come through as well. And even James Lowe as well, he's come through. So this is quite he's retained a core of the spine of the successful team from the Joe Schmidt era, and added to it and replenished it with new players and this newer brand of rugby. I want to take slight issue with something you said, Simon, and when you said that the last two Six Nations were desperate. For me, they were never desperate. Ireland have now finished in the top 3 of the Six Nations for 8 years in a row. 2 third place finishes, not great, but England they've just had their second fifth place finish under Eddie Jones. There's no other team in the Six Nations that's been top half the table for 8 years in a row. And okay, we're expected to beat Wales and Scotland now, which is part of the lobotomy that Joe Schmidt helped perform with a golden generation of players on Irish rugby, that Leinster and Ireland became so comfortable winning as favourites that it was just ho-hum. It became ho-hum whenever they did. It wasn't always like this. But then in the Six Nations last year, I think you've got to make a huge allowance for that Peter O'Mahony red card and what would have happened in that opening game against Wales. Ireland were playing really good rugby in that first half. They were well on top, and they stayed on top until halftime before playing with 14 men eventually took its toll. And then in the 24 hours before the French game, they lost Johnny Sexton, Conor Murray and James Ryan. Like, when you think back on it, that if you took the 3 best players out of the All Blacks 24 hours before kickoff, even they might struggle a little bit. And I think then, although it was just generally scoffed at, the performance against Italy and Rome was outstanding. It was a gutsy away win in Murrayfield. And Ireland absolutely dissected England in the last game of the Six Nations. And that was after 3 supposedly damaging psychological defeats in a row to England. So they came into this season then after a couple of really good wins over the summer on the run of 5 successive wins. I don't think this... I agree with you totally, Trimby. The attack has evolved to another level, for sure. But there had been, Johnny Sexton had been saying, even when they were losing those couple of first games, we're onto something. And I think they did come into this campaign with a fair degree of momentum. And that shouldn't be forgotten.
Andrew, there was quite a few pieces written about how our attack has evolved and how it's managing to escape the clutches of a rush defence in particular, where we might fall into alignment, the attacking team, the Ireland players have fallen into alignment quite late so that the defender doesn't know who to match up against. And this has been used at various levels, but it struck me that it's one thing to have the tactic, and it's clearly a Mike Catt tactic, but it's another to actually execute it. And I just wondered, would all of this work without Sexton, particularly that element of the game, that ability now to outflank a rush defence?
Yeah, I think there is a big question mark around that still, and we're all in agreement. It was brilliant to see Joey Carberry. I think we were all nervous about him stepping up, take that kick, and we all have a lot of hope and a lot of expectation that he is such a talent and he will eventually move on and fulfill the kind of expectation that we have for him. But I think there still is that doubt. That's where Johnny's unbelievably strong, just structuring that that phase play. And I think if you could kind of summarize the difference between the Schmidt era and the Farrell era, I think Schmidt era was kind of having a structure to launch from and going from set piece and getting into that phase play, you know, 4, 5, 6 phases. Whereas the Farrell era just seemed, well, again, based on the last two games, let's say more so to your point, Jerry, but increasingly so, it's just been that phase play. They can pick up the ball from anywhere, from set piece, from turnover, from restart, and they can get into that template. And I think Johnny's right at the middle of that template. And how is he still getting away with that little wraparound pass? It is just undefendable. And now I think there's a lot of other people making that happen. There's a lot of thoughts gone into that. And those short lines just are really accurate, really dangerous, and they're really realistic as well. We can't go front door options whenever the time is right, whenever the defender's trying to overread or shoot through. But the wingers, James Lowe would probably less so. Hugo and Andrew Conway are they're workaholics. They get round the corner the whole time, and they come up late, to your point, Simon. I think just that little ball off the shoulder is so deceptive and so difficult to defend. And Ringrose defends that type of thing really well, but he would struggle with that as well. Whenever it's done really well, it's very, very difficult, and you get guys at the line and they're just tipping it on. The only problem with that is you can get a little bit lateral and you can get a little bit sideways. The skill to that is showing late, but getting around the corner and turning the corner and getting straight. I think we seem to be doing that pretty well, and it's very, very dangerous. But to your point, Johnny is right at the center of that. Yes, when he's on the ball, he contributes, but it's everything off the ball. He is organizing. He's he's the guy in the right in the middle of everything, and he's making sure everybody's in the right position. And I'm not sure if anybody else can do that as well as he does it.
Sexton was saying, Scotty, that this is only the start for Ireland, and I think burnt into all our memories is that 2018 win over New Zealand, us then deeming ourselves the number one in the world, and New Zealand going, well, you're on top now, let's see how you cope with that. We do it over decades and centuries and we cope with it, but it's your first time trying. But it sort of feels like that was our first time ever getting to that sort of level and sort of respect from other countries ever in our history. And we didn't deal with it very well. We dealt with it terribly, actually. But I feel it's different now for a couple of reasons. A, we've gone through that experience and hopefully learned from it. B, 2018 was on the brink of the World Cup, essentially. It was less than a year to go to the World Cup. We're still 2 years away. And see, it was the combination of us just getting better and better and better under Schmidt and being absolutely certain we'd found the right way to go. Whereas we're at the very start, I feel, of Farrell getting to grips with this job and Cat finally employing his game plan. What sort of room for improvement do you think Ireland have from here? Because I don't think we'll play this well every game. We won't always have 50,000 fans going absolutely berserk. We won't always have that energy that New Zealand actually give us when they visit. We actually play really well against New Zealand now when they visit. We'll be away to Scotland on some dreary Sunday in Murrayfield. So there's all those other factors that will come into it in the future.
Well, I think the importance to a team is to set a benchmark, right? And I think from Andy Farrell's perspective, and I don't know the guy, but you know, one train of thought is that that's your benchmark now, right? This is how you've imposed yourself on the game. This is the kind of possession stats and territory stats that we want to play to. A template, as Trimby mentioned. I think one of the key elements is that the Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, 9-10 pivot has been so crucial for Ireland under Joe Schmidt. But to see Jamieson Gibson-Park start that game, that says to me that there's a sense of adventure about Andy Farrell. And the way that he wants to play and the speed with which he wants to play that is very, very different to Joe's tenure in charge of Ireland. And Trimby may disagree with that, but Jamie's just a different player. I know the kid well, and you know, I watched him a lot in New Zealand. So
he wasn't always this good, right?
Oh, look, he's improved out of sight. He's just been involved in really good programs. So he's been able to, I think, meld together his instinct with the structure of the Northern Hemisphere game, and that's crucial. I just think his support play and his distribution's been fantastic, and that's not to say, before anyone berates me, that Conor Murray doesn't have all those attributes. But Conor played he was a real role player, I think, in international rugby for a long time. And it became, I think, even watching him, I don't know about opposing him or playing with him, you kind of knew what Conor was going to do. I think Jamieson Gibson-Park is a bit of a free radical in that respect. And perhaps that's just unlocked a little bit of Johnny as well. and allowed that back line a little bit more freedom. And that's not to say it's better or worse than what Conor Murray offered. It's just different. I think that this is the kind of performance that really does sit you down as a team and you get to ground yourselves to say, you know, we went out there, we implemented a game plan, we got the victory. There are no excuses on the other side. If anyone in the All Blacks or anyone in New Zealand rugby tries to make excuses for that loss, discount them out of hand. So if you can ground yourself now after what is a great victory, a comprehensive victory, then you can go and build on that. The one thing that I would caution against is, as you mentioned, getting ahead of yourselves now and saying, well, we've beaten the number one team in the world. We're now favourites to win a Rugby World Cup. We know that tournament throws up all sorts of different emotional elements and spiritual elements, and Jerry knows it more than I do when it comes to following Ireland through World Cups. We know it's a challenge for them. But this, I think, really is a benchmark performance, not just for this Irish squad, but also for Andy Farrell. I think this is his moment as a head coach to say, see, trust me, I trust you. And your fans will trust you as well. If they can build that trust and keep building on that trust, there is no reason to think that Ireland can't hit France in 2023 as one of the outright favourites to go yeah. all the way.
Yeah, you know,
Scotty,
Jerry,
stop. He's tricking us. No. I was really hoping we might go through this entire conversation without mentioning the World Cup once, not even once. Sod the World Cup. The World Cup can wait. Everybody in that ground last Saturday would say it was one of the greatest days of their lives, one of the greatest sporting days of their lives.
Yeah, atmosphere, Jerry, was
insane, Simon. Off the scale. Insane.
I know it's rubbish when people talk about friendlies and it tends to be like a soccer J fan or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But like that had way more like jeopardy and nerves and energy and all the passion, all those things than plenty of Six Nations games and even some World Cup games.
People criticise the hack and say it gives, you know, the All Blacks a bit of a psychological edge before kickoff. I'm all for it if it can get 50,000 Irish people seated 15 minutes before kickoff, because I don't know anything else that does. And it meant that the crowd were engaged, they're really into the game long before kickoff. Jimmy Heaslip used to complain when he was leading the Ireland team out and all the empty seats before the anthems. But no, everybody was there. There was very few empty seats. An Irish crowd seated, ready to go 15 minutes before kickoff. This is a miracle. So let's keep the hacker forevermore. Maybe we should have it before every game. And then straight on top of that, so the crowd are engaged, the Fields of Athenry comes in at the end of the Haka. Wasn't sure about that. Memory went back to Tokyo because they didn't like the Haka being drowned out that day, the All Blacks. And then the intent from the first 2 minutes of the match, there's not a break. And Ireland just attack, and earn the right to go wide and come back. And they give away a penalty for Henderson coming in off his feet. And Johnny Sexton comes up and just starts applauding everybody. And the crowd are applauding. And it's like, right, we're going to give this a good rattle now. And the crowd just stayed with them, stayed engaged. Even when Luke Pearce and his TMO were taking an age over whether Seve Rees knocked the ball before the line or after the line, it didn't diffuse the atmosphere at all. It was insane. It was absolutely insane. I mean, it's obviously a little bit of an antidote to the last 2 years. It was the first full house in a year and three quarters. But it was, and nobody left at the full-time whistle. There were hardly anybody leaving. Everybody was staying seated, wanted to soak it all in, wanted to hear the post-match interviews, or wanted to watch the team go around the pitch. That's all. So getting them in early and keeping them on late. The problem, of course, will be you just won't replicate that next Sunday. Argentina don't attract that interest, don't attract that fervour. They're dogged, tough opponents. I watched their game against France. It'll be a Sunday afternoon. Sunday afternoons are never good unless it's the All Blacks in town. Wasn't 2013 or 18, the All Blacks as well. That was a one-off Sunday afternoon, a one-off. Sunday afternoons generally don't cut it. And then Farrell's got to, you know, think about what he does with his team. Like, he'd probably rejig it a bit. You wouldn't want to make 15 changes against the Pumas, though. I'm telling you, they rattled Francis Cage. That was a proper test match last Saturday week. They're in your face. They're aggressive. They're narky. They're looking for a bit of shirt tugging and a bit of afters. And you've got Geronimo De La Fuente, probably the best-named rugby player on the planet, mowing down French midfielders. The Entomac Jalibert thing didn't work. So it's a really tough game, and it's just going to be, the crowd won't be as up for it, and it's going to be as tough for the Irish team to get as up for it as well. But I just thought it was a great one-off win.
and we should enjoy it as a great one-off win and not just think about the World Cup. And the good thing, as you said, Simon, it's 2 years out from a World Cup, and Ireland now have to go to New Zealand next July. Ireland haven't been there in 10 years. It's about time they went back there. It's the ultimate test. It's all well and good winning one-off games in the Aviva or even Chicago. It's another thing entirely to take on a three-test tour. Ireland have been to South Africa, nearly won a series there, came back behind to win a series in Australia. But this is the ultimate. Scotty will tell us how many times they've lost a series at home, maybe twice, once to Lions, once to France, something like that in history. And that will give us a much better barometer of where we're at with regard to the bloody World Cup.
So, Andrew, okay, Jerry wants us to just enjoy the moment. Scotty has basically awarded us the World Cup already. Where do you stand on this longer term? Because I do feel there's an element that you do need to keep your feet on the ground a little bit. I agree with everything Jerry says about the importance of the occasion and like the idea that it doesn't matter. Not, you know, we're not making that argument, but you do hear sometimes, oh, it's only a November international or whatever. But it matters insofar as I'm jumping up off the couch with my father-in-law watching the match. People at the game are going absolutely crazy. Everybody's just bringing joy to hundreds of thousands of people. So by definition, it matters to the people who it matters to. At the same time, we were probably saying a lot of the same things after the win in 2018. That was under a coach and a team who'd already won a Grand Slam. We had good reason to think we actually could be top of the world. Whereas now, is there still, do we have to hold fire a little bit until we wait and see what this team can do from here on in?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how this goes. And I talking about the game at the weekend as a friendly, I think there's only really one person who talks about it as a friendly. The rest of us enjoy it for what it is, and I will not even give him a mention. But as far as looking forward to the next 6 months and going to New Zealand, that's something that will just easily keep our feet in the ground. And I'm thinking about Chicago 2016. I think it was the week after, maybe 2 weeks after, we played the All Blacks back in Dublin, and we got battered. They were so fired up. They were so physical. Fikitoa was taking Henshaw's head off. Zeebo got his head taken off. The All Blacks scored and after 5 minutes on the far side, and Israel Dagg just got up and screamed at us, and we went, we have that. That is a compliment because never before were they that passionate against Ireland. Never did they care as much, because it didn't mean as much. We weren't really on their agenda. That was the first time we registered on their agenda, and that times 10 is where we are now. Now, I don't know if the 2 week or 1 week turnaround, whatever it was back in 2016, that was short enough for them to still be fired up and to be hurting. Now, 6 months, 8 months until the June tests, that three test series down in New Zealand. Is that enough time for them to get more fired up, or is that enough time for them to calm down? I hope they calm down in the months until the tour. And I'm really interested to see, first of all, that's their emotional state, whatever the way they approach it from that perspective. But tactically, I just wonder if maybe they think, you know what, the reason why they got the better of us in 2016 as a backlash is because they were confrontational, they were physical. I wonder if maybe they'll say, you know, maybe the Northern Hemisphere approach is the way to beat Ireland from now on. And we could end up finding ourselves in New Zealand, pissing rain, playing effectively England, you know, and that, you know, that'll play out well for them. And that might be the way they go.
Scotty, I was about to wrap things up, but I have to give you the right of response there.
I mean, New Zealand's got a test against France to make this tour worthwhile. I don't think All Blacks will ever revert to the truly Northern Hemisphere stereotype. And I hate to use that because, quite frankly, if you've got a style of rugby that works for you as a team, bring it on and do it. And one of the things that absolutely pisses me off is a New Zealand attitude that if you don't play rugby the way New Zealanders play rugby, it's not rugby. That's absolute bullshit. And that's half the problem. I think there's a sense of entitlement here, and that when a team doesn't allow you to play the game you want to play, then it's their fault. And suddenly they should be to blame. I would hate to get to a point where New Zealand suddenly went into their shell because they were scared of what was coming. I think where Ireland have shone in this match is they still made turnovers, but they were able to gather their thoughts and defend again. And then when the opportunity arose, they were able to attack. And when they decided to attack, they bent and they bent and they bent and they bent that line, and they showed the patience that used to be always required to get the victory. And I think that's the one thing that has slipped from the All Blacks' oeuvre at the moment, is the patience required to win test matches.
Scotty, listen, well done for fronting up today. Great stuff. Andrew, brilliant. Jerry, great stuff again. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
New Zealand to Ryan Clotty, getting for the try on the near side of the pitch. Oh, dear, I don't believe it.
Ryan Clotty scores!
Oh, my goodness!
They've managed it. It's 22 each.
Have you got a chance?
No. No, I genuinely would be happy with a 20-point differential.
What?
I think that would be a success, yeah.
Losing by 20 points would be a success?
Yeah.
Come on.
Losing by 20 points would be a success? Yeah. Come on.
Still running with the ball, Zeebo in a bit of space, and there's plenty of room too. All Blacks flying back in defence. Off it goes to Julian Savir. He can't go anywhere. 5 metres scrum.
Oh, what a play from Ireland! This is it, really. This is it for Ireland. They can put this one out of reach.
I do not expect them, unless they are demanded to by the referee, to release this ball from the scrum.
Less than 5 minutes. Here's Heaslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Henshaw! Robbie Henshaw scores it!
They did it! He bangs it down and oh my goodness, I think, dare I say it, this could be it for Ireland.
Handy conversion for Joey Carberry to make his contribution on debut. All Blacks charge. Up go the flags.
History in the making, and they are really good for an island. They deserve this, and what a night it's going to be.
What a triumph it is for Joe Smith, Kiwi boy, who's engineered some real history. Into the grandstand it goes. Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time.
One man who has featured heavily in conversation already today is James Lowe. So let's finish with him. This is another bit of that interview he did on Channel 4 after the game.
It's amazing. Like, never in a million years could I have thought that this day would come. Since I was a kid, you know, I dreamt of being an All Black man. Like, that's just a very Kiwi thing to do. I gave up that dream. I wasn't quite good enough when I was at my best almost. And to be able to come over here and put in a performance against the best team in the world, man. They're the standard bearers. And, oh, like, words can't describe to hear, you know, my native country's national anthem, to stand in front of the haka. Like, it's a childhood dream. Like, yeah.
Now, interestingly, I saw this clip tweeted originally by Jim Hamilton, the former Scotland international and now podcaster, who says, for anyone who questions residency rules and or project players, this is an example of why you shouldn't. A snapshot of what it means. I imagine it must have been extremely strange to be stood in front of the haka having grown up doing it. Now, I'm not sure that really what James Lowe was saying there is going to silence the doubters. I dreamed of being an All Black. I wasn't good enough. And here I am now standing in front of the haka anyway. It's a childhood dream. Look, I love James Lowe. I'm happy to see him play for Ireland. But even I was looking at that thinking, James, did you have to spell it out so baldly? As Malachy Clerkin says in the Irish Times, this whole cod of of the residency rule, I don't know. I don't know if what James Lowe said there would be ammunition for the way that Jim Hamilton
thought. It is obviously true. Like, that is what James Lowe thinks. So we should be thankful for that and thankful for him to be honest enough to say it. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's one in the eye to the residency rule doubters, that's for sure.
Felt a little close to the bone, I thought, say.
Yeah, I didn't really want to be reminded of it that much. I don't mind reading about it, hearing about it during the week, but just at that moment, crowd going absolutely bonkers behind him, it just felt a little off. And yet at the same time, I don't want him to... I want the honesty from him. It's one of the major reasons. I think we all love him, you know. But it's just the truth of it, isn't it? But then, you know, one of our most patriotic eras in our history was Italia 90 and Euro 88, backed by, you know, tons of players who were picked based on their grandmother maybe being born in Ireland, moving to England for most of their lives. And a guy who's living here 5 years, the 3 years thing was crazy. 5 years, I mean, there's no right or wrong in it. There's no like absolute line where you say, oh, it's fine or it's not.
Imagine they've been like, oh, you know, to stand here in front of, you know, against my country's team, the best team in the world, and to hear my national anthem, God Save the Queen, you know, after the World Cup. You know, yeah, it's just, come on, like, you know, you just, I couldn't believe what he said that.
And at the end of the day, what Simon says is absolutely true. Like, James Lord knows what Today FM is, you know, and a chicken fillet roll. this is stuff that, you know, we used to laugh at that thing about, you know, who's this guy, you know, when Charles Sahi comes into the dressing room after Italian. We used to literally laugh at that. You know, like, that's not something to laugh at. That's actually something we feel really grim about, you know? That this could, that here is a group of people, and you couldn't get a group of people in the entire 26 counties that knew less about Ireland than this team that we're, like, transposing all of our hopes and dreams onto during Italia 90. Like, that's fine, you know what I mean? It's no big deal, but that was just the reality of it. So, I mean, I am inclined to agree with Simon there.
It's just, you know, that Lowe made us confront the whole thing in our minds straight after an amazing win.
at a rather inconvenient moment for us.
It's John Bruton really so wrong, you know, at the end of the day? Like, would we not all enthusiastically adopt membership of the Commonwealth, you know, at least all the rugby section of the population, you know, having seen how we can work together with our brothers and sisters from the far-flung colonies and empire, you know, from the beaches of Gallipoli to the turf of the Aviva, us, the Kiwis, the Aussies, the South Africans. You know, has there ever been a team really quite like it? You know, when you look back, I don't know. It's one to chew on, certainly.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you,
Ken. Thanks, Murph. I'm looking forward to seeing
Simon, Owen, and Ken.
Which of the back rowers will be man of the match against Argentina?
Oh, we
will.
I'm telling you, I'm already a quiver with anticipation. who will get the nod? It could be literally any one of three players.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you in the World Service tomorrow, if, of course, you're a World Service member.
It's the second time it's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.